Thank you, and good afternoon to our friends in Florida, and good morning to our friends in Texas. Welcome to our web briefing on open enrollment. I'm Karen Pollitt, Senior Fellow at the Kaiser Family Foundation, and I'm here with my colleague, Jen Tolbert, who's our Director of State Health Reform. And we're happy to be joined today by Jody Ray, the Director of Florida's Covering Kids and Families initiative, and by Daniel Bouton, the Director of Community Health Services at the Community Council of Greater Dallas, Texas. Before we start, just a few housekeeping items. I want to remind everyone that the web briefing is being recorded. The archived recording and the slides will be posted online at kff.org after our webinar concludes, and everyone who RSVP'd will receive a notification when they're posted, so you will have that link. I also want to remind our audience that this is a listen-only format, so you can chat, use the chat feature on your screen to type in questions for the speakers at any time during the web briefing. We will answer them at the end of our presentations during the Q&A section. If you have specific questions for one of our state speakers, please be sure to specify what state you're asking about. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jen Tolbert to begin our part of the presentation.
Great. Thank you, Karen. So, great. So the Affordable Care Act's fifth open enrollment is less than a week away, and while this should be familiar to many, in some respects, consumers may be laboring under more uncertainty, confusion, and misinformation than was the case just before the first open enrollment back in 2013. It's been a tumultuous year with many events leading us up to today. Clearly, the past year has been dominated by a debate in Congress over repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. Following the failure of efforts to replace the ACA, the administration has taken a number of steps, including shortening the open enrollment period, reducing federal funding for advertising and for in-person assistance, and most recently, terminating payments to insurance companies for the cost-sharing subsidies they're required by law to provide. So our tracking polls here at the Kaiser Family Foundation find evidence of confusion and uncertainty among consumers. Following the debate over repeal of the ACA, nearly 30% of the general public and 40% of the uninsured do not know or are unsure whether the law's individual mandate remains in effect. So, first thing consumers need to know about open enrollment is that the ACA is still the law. There is still a requirement to have health coverage or pay a tax penalty. The penalty for 2018 is the same as for 2017, and it is the greater of $695 per adult or 2.5% of income above the federal income tax filing threshold. Now, to satisfy the mandate, people can sign up for health coverage offered at their work, or they can apply for Medicaid or CHIP coverage. And although Florida and Texas did not elect the ACA's Medicaid expansion, even so, we estimate that more than 740,000 residents of these two states are eligible for Medicaid or CHIP but are not currently enrolled. And people who don't have access to job-based health coverage or to public programs can buy individual health insurance. Subsidies are available through the marketplace for people with income between the federal poverty level and four times the poverty level, which is about $12,000 to $48,000 a year for a single individual. But non-group coverage can only be purchased during open enrollment or outside of that period following certain life changes that qualify for special enrollment periods. So our tracking poll also found that people don't know when this coming open enrollment starts and ends. Even among people already enrolled in the marketplace, 60% are unaware that the next open enrollment begins on November 1st. And among the uninsured, 85% don't know this opening date. And 75% of marketplace enrollees and 95% of the uninsured are unaware that the open enrollment period ends this year on December 15th. So consumers need to know these dates. All previous open enrollment periods have extended at least through the end of January, but this year it's different. In healthcare.gov states, or in states that utilize healthcare.gov, the open enrollment period for 2018 coverage is shorter, just 6 weeks, and it starts on November 1st and ends on December 15th. After that date, consumers will not be able to buy an individual health insurance policy for 2018 unless they have a qualifying event like the loss of other coverage that triggers a special enrollment period. Now, the federal government has announced that there will be a special extension of open enrollment for individuals who attest to residing in or moving from areas affected by the hurricanes in 2017. Those areas include all counties in the state of Florida and 51 counties in East Texas and the Dallas metro area. So this year, as in the past, people who are already enrolled in Marketplace coverage and who don't act by 11:59 p.m. on December 15th to renew or change coverage will likely be automatically renewed in current coverage by the Marketplace for another year. If their current plan is not being offered again in 2018, the Marketplace will likely automatically renew them in a different plan. Auto renewal has been standard practice for several years now. In fact, during the last open enrollment, 23% of Marketplace signups were accomplished by auto renewal. However, consumers have always been advised to actively shop and not just to rely on auto renewal. This year, that is especially good advice. In the past, people could see results of auto renewal in January and still have a month to change plans if they were unhappy with the premium or with the plan that they were automatically renewed into. But that won't be the case this year. As we'll discuss in a minute, a number of 2017 Marketplace insurers are leaving in 2018 and premiums are increasing, unlike what we've seen in the past. It will be very important for people to log in to healthcare.gov to see new plan choices and costs and make the choice that's best for them. So there will be some changes this year in terms of insurers participating in the marketplaces in both Florida and Texas. Notably, Humana will stop participating in the marketplace in both states next year. In addition, Prominence Health First is also exiting the Texas marketplace. But in both states, Centene is expanding its service area in response to Humana's exit. Oscar is also expanding in Texas. The other insurers who participated in 2017 will continue to offer marketplace plans in 2018. Now, in both states, there will be two or more insurers offering marketplace coverage in the metro areas, but in many rural counties, there will only be one offering insurer, similar to what was the case in 2017. And at this point, I'm going to turn it back over to Karen to talk about premiums.
Okay, thanks, Jen. Our tracking polls also find that marketplace consumers are very worried about affordability in 2018. A majority are concerned they won't be able to continue to afford coverage next year due to rising deductibles and to rising premiums. So let me start with the rising deductibles. Consumers need to know that all of the ACA subsidies are still there, and in particular, the cost-sharing subsidies that reduce deductibles and copays under marketplace plans. Now, there have been news reports incorrectly describing these subsidies as terminating. They are not terminating. The cost-sharing reductions are still there for marketplace enrollees with income between the poverty level and 2.5 times the poverty level. The vast majority of marketplace enrollees are eligible, 75% in Florida and 63% of marketplace enrollees in Texas claim these subsidies this year. They are delivered only through silver plans. You can see a picture of how they work on this slide. People buy a silver plan that normally has a pretty high deductible, but depending on their income, that plan is modified to provide them with a reduced deductible and copays and other cost sharing. Then the insurers, as consumers make claims and hit these artificially lowered deductibles, the insurers submit that bill to the federal government and get reimbursed. And it's that reimbursement that President Trump announced a few weeks ago he will cancel. Now that's something the president had been threatening to do all year. So in anticipation that this could happen, most insurance companies raised their 2018 premiums so that they wouldn't lose money from that cancellation of that reimbursement. So two important takeaways for consumers. One, the cost-sharing subsidies are still there for you. And two, although insurers are raising their premiums a lot in 2018, consumers will mostly be held harmless. What most insurers did for 2018 is apply this special rate increase for the lost cost-sharing reimbursement just to the premium for silver plans, because those are the plans that deliver the cost-sharing subsidies. And in fact, many insurers applied this extra rate increase just to the silver plans offered on the marketplace, not to their off-marketplace silver plans. As a result, people are going to find that premiums will increase much more in silver plans in 2018 than will premiums for bronze or gold plans. That's different. It's not something that we're used to seeing. But because the dollar value of premium tax credits is tied to the cost of the benchmark silver plan, when silver plan premiums go up, tax credits go up, just about dollar for dollar. And those tax credits can be used to buy any plan on the marketplace. The bottom line for consumers, if you are eligible for tax credits, know that the tax credit will absorb the premium increase. As long as you buy the benchmark silver plan or a cheaper plan, you'll pay about the same or less for coverage in 2018 than you did in 2017. Now, of course, the benchmark plan can change from year to year, and that's why it's important for consumers to actively renew their plan choices and their costs during open enrollment. This year, because of the unusual pattern of premium rate increases, people may also find other deals. They may find that other metal level options will be even more affordable in 2018 than they were this year. And for consumers who are not eligible for premium tax credits, it may be possible to avoid this unusual premium surcharge by looking at options other than the marketplace silver plan. Look at other metal level plans and also see if your insurer is offering a clone of the silver marketplace plan off marketplace for a lower premium. Let's just take a look at a couple of examples. These are taken right off of healthcare.gov. The window shopping tool opened this week, so people can go to healthcare.gov, enter their own information, age, income, and so forth, and see what their own situation will be like in 2018. This example shows a 30-year-old who lives in Miami and whose income is at twice the poverty level, or about $24,000 in 2018. In 2017, this person, same income, was eligible for a tax credit of $145 a month. And if she used that credit to buy the benchmark silver plan, she would have paid another $127 a month for her share of the premium. Now, in 2018, the benchmark plan is going up by more than $100 a month, but her tax credit will go up by the same amount. So if she buys the benchmark plan again in 2018, she can still get it for $127 a month. If she prefers to buy the lowest cost bronze plan in 2017, she would have paid $100 a month for that. But in 2018, that'll be a zero premium plan for her because her tax credit has gone up so much. And similarly, the lowest cost gold plan would have cost her $186 a month in 2017, but that cost will drop to $139 a month in 2018, again, because of the larger tax credit amount. Now let's move this young woman to Dallas. Same story. In 2017, she was eligible for a tax credit of $124 a month, and if she used that credit to buy the benchmark silver plan, it would have cost her $127 a month. If she wants to stay with the benchmark plan this year, still $127 a month, because her tax credit is going to grow by more than $100, because that's what's happening to the premium for the benchmark plan. She also can get the lowest cost bronze plan this year for almost nothing, for $5 a month, And if she's interested in the gold plan, that will be cheaper for her than it was in 2017. Again, the bottom line message for consumers, premiums are going up a lot in 2018 as insurers price for the loss of these federal payments and for other uncertainty. But most of that increase is being applied to silver plans, so the subsidies will keep up. Subsidy-eligible individuals will be able to pay about the same amount or less for their monthly premiums, and consumers who aren't eligible for subsidies may have the choice of other plans on and off the marketplace that aren't rising by such a high amount. Okay, moving on just to some other new rules that consumers should be aware as this open enrollment gets underway. There's a requirement if you've been in the marketplace for a while, if you received tax credits in 2016, you were required to file a federal income tax return this spring in 2017, and to include this Form 8962, an IRS form that you use to reconcile the premium tax credit that you received last year with the actual amount you were eligible for. If you didn't file a return with Form 8962 and you're in this situation, you won't be eligible when you apply for tax credits this open enrollment for 2018. You'll find this out when you apply for 2018 coverage and you get a determination notice from the marketplace saying you're not eligible for tax credits. The trick is the notice won't say why you're ineligible exactly. Instead, it will give you a list of possible reasons why you're not eligible, and you're going to have to figure it out. If it turns out that failure to file with this Form 8962 is the reason, you can fix it by filing an amended return, then logging back into healthcare.gov and indicate this change in your account, and that should turn your subsidies back on. The other new rule that's being implemented this year allows insurers to refuse to effectuate your 2018 coverage if you owe past due premiums from 2017. This is a brand new rule. It took effect in June 19th of this year, and so hopefully it won't affect very many people. It only applies to missed premiums that happened after that date. If insurers are going to do this, they were required to notify you in 2017 that they will be adopting this practice in 2018. If you do get a notice from the insurer that says you owe money and you disagree, an appeals process has not been set up for this yet by the federal government, so you're going to have to get in touch with your state insurance regulator and with the marketplace, probably hook up with a navigator to help you get through this and see if you can resolve that situation with your insurance company. If there's another insurer in your marketplace, you can also just switch over and buy from them. Hopefully this won't affect too many people, but looking ahead as you sign up for 2018, know that missing a premium next year might limit your ability to sign up for coverage the following year. So, given all of this, the last thing we want to mention is that consumers need to know how important it is to get started early. Waiting until the last few days of open enrollment is risky. Every open enrollment so far, there's been a surge of activity in the final days. Healthcare.gov starts to run a little slow. The screen can freeze. The wait times for the call center can be very long. In the past, HHS has allowed what they call an in-line extension for people who started their application before the end of open enrollment but couldn't complete enrollment by the deadline. It's not clear if they're going to do that again this year. They haven't said. There may be other things that would slow you down. HHS has also announced there will be planned maintenance on healthcare.gov during open enrollment, including every Sunday morning and possibly even on the first day. As Jen mentioned at the top, HHS has also cut federal funding for navigator programs that HHS funds. The overall cut for programs in Florida was about 30% and about 34% of Texas. This was very uneven across the programs. But some have had to lay off staff or reduce their hours or the geographic areas that they could serve. And it was always hard, even before these funding reductions, sometimes to get an appointment to see a navigator during the last few days of open enrollment. So don't wait until the last minute. Start as early as you can. Set up your healthcare.gov account. update your application, review your plan choices, see these interesting new costs, and then get enrolled for coverage for 2018. I'm just going to close by reminding people that the Kaiser Family Foundation has a lot of resources for consumers and others on open enrollment, including our frequently asked questions. Our subsidy calculator will be updated very soon to reflect the new 2018 premiums and other resources. So we encourage you to come to our website and take advantage of all of those. That's it for our presentation. And now I'm going to turn it back to Jody Ray so that she can tell us about what's going on in the state of Florida. Jody.
Thank you, Karen. Yes, I am with the University of South Florida. We have, I believe, the largest Navigator grant in the country. So we actually covered the entire state of Florida, Pensacola to Key West. And we are located at the Lawton Maria Child Center in the College of Public Health here at USF. Next slide, please. Thank you. So this is just a map of our consortium. Like I said, we cover the entire state, but we've broken the state up into these regions. And we work with organizations in each of these regions to sort of lead the effort. They know their population. They work with the people that are serving those population in some capacity already. They speak the language. You know, all of those things. They've already established trust with consumers in those communities. So we have a very strong network of navigators that are covering the entire state. Next, please. So for OE5, we definitely have fewer navigators, and typically throughout the year we have, I guess, about 150 navigators. What we've done to accommodate the changes is we've scaled back our navigator workforce that it typically is available all year long, and we've sort of, even though we have people on the ground throughout the year, we have ramped it up for the open enrollment period, which means that once we get outside of open enrollment, it will drop significantly. So the intention is to provide as much boots on the ground with the resources we have during open enrollment to meet the needs. I think this is probably it's even changed. We have a whole lot of events scheduled around the state. So this was probably something I did. I don't even remember when we did these slides, but we've got NavLab events, which this number specifically reflects, which are events that are put together by navigators specifically, where they have we've got a number of navigators coming into a given area, so we can do mass enrollment all at once. We coupled that with sending navigators out to other types of community events, as well as providing office hours. They're mobile. They're meeting people in their communities. So there are a number of ways that we make navigators accessible for consumers around the state. We also made a decision with this project, regardless of the cuts that we took, that we weren't going to eliminate populations, vulnerable populations that we were serving already and had been serving throughout the previous open enrollment periods. We were going to continue serving them to the extent that we have the resources to do so, because we find that the people that need the assistance of navigators more often than not are some of our most hard-to-reach and vulnerable populations, and they have come in with some of the more complex situations, and we were going to continue to serve them until it's feasibly and physically impossible to serve any more individuals during this open enrollment period. We are working long days. We're accommodating consumers with nights and weekends, as well as regular business hours. And like I said, you know, in addition to hosting mass enrollment events in different areas of the state, we are also making sure that our navigators are very mobile and they're going out into these rural areas and reaching people where they are. Next, please. So some key elements of our program is we are continuing to use the connector tool. That scheduler is actually available. It's on our coveringflorida.org website, which allows consumers to actually go in and search by zip code for an available navigator and look at what available appointments there are through open enrollment. So consumers are actively going out to the website and scheduling their own appointments in addition to contacting our navigator partners and all directly. They can also go onto the Covering Florida website for some basic information about open enrollment, and they are calling our 877-813-9115 number, and they can speak to a navigator, and a navigator will also facilitate scheduling them with a consumer anywhere in the state. So we're utilizing all of these things to streamline consumer access to the navigators where they don't have to dig around and figure out who is the assister in their state. We're pushing out one number, one website. We are also actively reaching out to consumers that have been served by our consortium over the past 4 years, and we're calling them. We've been doing this for months now, actually, to let them know about the shortened open enrollment period, encouraging them to make appointments and come in and review the plans. And make sure that their plan options or even the plan that they have to make sure that that is a plan that still suits their needs. We are, like I said, we are putting ourselves everywhere we can have the greatest access to consumers that need help. We are in busy places around the community. We are in hospitals, we are working with our hospital partners, we are in libraries, we're in churches, we're, you know, anywhere we can be as visible as possible for consumers. We are, like I said, we are partnering with some of the people that we've worked with over the years, working with the statewide ADAP staff to make sure that we're helping consumers who are on the ADAP program that need to transition in the marketplace plans, that they're getting the assistance they need. So, you know, like I said, these are all of the things that we're, that are encompassing how we're aggressively and actively seeking out consumers who may need assistance this year. Next, please. So this is the information about the Covering Florida website. Again, Covering Florida is the name of our statewide consortium of navigators. They are, again, from Pensacola to Key West. We're encouraging people to access the website to either schedule their own appointment or call and schedule an appointment with a navigator and or ask questions, ask basic questions, and also to come in and make sure their account information is up to date. So we're providing that assistance as well and have been leading up to November 1st so that when they're coming in, ideally, we're not doing that at the same time we're reviewing plans and getting them into whatever plan choice that they need to make during open enrollment. So that's our approach for this coming open enrollment, and I will turn it back over. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jody. To our listeners, just a reminder that you can submit your questions now if you have them by chat, and we'll get to them in just a few minutes when we're finished with our presentation. So now I'd like to recognize Daniel Bouton from the Community Council of Greater Dallas to tell us about open enrollment and what's going on in Texas.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation and for the opportunity to talk about what we're doing here in this beautiful state of Texas to get ready for Open Enrollment 5. My name is Daniel Bouton, and I am the Director of Community Health Services here at the Community Council of Greater Dallas. I have been involved with the Affordable Care Act since the initial years during Open Enrollment 1. And I tell you without a doubt that this year feels as challenging as year one. But with the push and the collaboration of all of us together, we're going to make it Open Enrollment 5 a very successful one. So let me tell you a little bit about our program. Next slide, please. So I lead the Enroll North Texas Consortium. We are covering 56 counties of the Northeast Central Region, which represents 16% of the land mass of Texas and 36.9% of the population. So it's a big, big area. We go to the border of Arkansas, border of Oklahoma, and the border of Louisiana. So really, when we put our plan together, we see a different approaches that is different from the urban, that is from the rural counties. But we really provide the information related to the territory and, of course, the plans that they are provided on those counties. Next slide, please. So for Open Enrollment 5, our consortium is, I do have to say, we have reduced the number of navigators. Our plan was to have 40 navigators out in these 56 counties. But, of course, because of funding reduction, we are at 35 navigators. We count with 19 bilingual, Spanish and Vietnamese, English, Vietnamese, of course, Spanish, and English, Spanish. We have a very heavy population of Vietnamese in the north territory of Dallas, and we have three phenomenal navigators that they are bilingual, Vietnamese and English. Our target populations, rural communities, of course, Latino populations, African American, and our LGBT community that we are always present providing enrollment with our Out to Enroll campaign with the Health and Human Service Department. Young adults and post-secondary grad students, new mothers and women with children, and veterans. So we have navigators targeting these populations and making sure that they have the education and the information and the access to be able to enroll in a qualifying health plan. Next slide, please. So as we talk about the different populations and the territory, it is crucial, of course, to have a new strategic plan to achieve this successful open enrollment period. It is important, and I really invite all of you guys to collect stories. I believe that if all of us start sharing that story that we hear every single day to demonstrate the positive impact that our navigators and CACs have in our communities, it's going to mean a lot. So really the storytelling, it's part of a strategic plan that the Community Council is being involved for the past 2 years with our navigators. We collect stories weekly, and we invite consumers to use their own social media platforms to post those pictures and post those hashtags. We try to, of course, cover different languages and you know, just inviting them to be part of it, for them to use their own platforms, their own Twitter and Facebook. So back in early September, we began a callback process, contacting previous year consumers to offer application and enrollment assistance for Open Enrollment 5. During these calls, we talk about the importance, just like Jody was saying, of those usernames and passwords to be up to date and be prepared. Of course, because of the shorter open enrollment, we have to get ahead of the game and talk to our consumers about that. So I tell you that Community Council and our team, we have performed over 2,500 calls in the past 2 months. We have numerous appointments already scheduled for next week, and we are excited about that. We want to have a presence in the community, and with that, I want to talk about for those listening in Dallas, we are going to be in Parkland Hospital, our largest county hospital, every single day providing access in 5 different locations. We have a very strong partnership with our first community church in a low-income neighborhood here in Dallas that it's donating the space, and we can thank them enough for that space. We are going to be a month and a half providing enrollment at these locations, and of course our main location here in Dallas. Again, partnerships and collaborations, you cannot do well without them. And our local and state coalitions. Next slide, please. So, talking about collective work and collaborations and coalitions, I do want to give a shout-out to Melissa McChesney. Melissa, I hope you're listening, and she leads the Cover Texas Now Coalition. It is a statewide coalition that it's consumer advocates focused on increasing access to healthcare in Texas, working to amplify the ACA outreach message in Texas and to support the local enrollment coalition. So, again, shout out Melissa McChesney. She has done an amazing, amazing job, really being the glue of different organizations and coalitions around the state. We come together once or twice a month just to talk about best practices and ideas and strategies, and I can't thank her enough for being at the front line of healthcare and making sure that our communities are having access to healthcare. Next slide, please. So with that, out of Cover Texas Now, we have numerous local coalitions in Austin, Enroll Austin, the Gulf Coast, Enroll North Texas Coalition here in Dallas. I do lead that in partnership with the office of Job Jenkins and Ruby Bloom. We have Enroll San Antonio, Enroll El Paso, Navigators the Green Valley area, and Corpus Christi. Shout out Christina Butler. She has done an amazing job in Corpus Christi with that coalition, and I want to just thank you for that. Next slide, please. And, of course, we will not be here with national help and national support helping us make an impact, helping us send the message as we heard from Karen incredible information, and we can't thank enough the Kaiser Family Foundation for this information that we really push to all of our navigators, and that gets to our communities with accurate and educated information about plans and rates and different things. And, of course, Young Invincibles that have a very strong presence here in Dallas, helping us with numerous issues. And now the National Association of Health Access Assisters really providing support for enrollment and support for navigators and CACs doing the work. Again, can't thank enough all of these national level associations. And I think with that, that's what we're doing in Texas. And everyone listening, thank you for what you're doing. And let's get ready. Open enrollment. It's right around the corner, a few days away. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel, and thank you, Jody. Now we are going to turn to questions that have been submitted via the chat function. There's still time to send in questions. If you have them following these presentations, just please, again, be specific about the state that you're asking about if your question is state-specific. And also, I just want to remind folks again that this briefing is being recorded and it will be posted online later today or certainly by tomorrow morning, and you will be emailed with a link where you can find the recording and also download the slides. So we've got a couple of questions that have come in. Let me just start by asking both Daniel and Jody, do people have to wait until November 1st to come see a navigator, or should they come in and see folks even this weekend?
Well, here at the Community Council, we see consumers every day for special enrollment periods or, for whatever type of issue that they have. So last week, we actually start seeing an increase of consumers starting to ask questions and they show up at our doors. So, no, don't wait. You know, it's an opportunity for us to look at those username and passwords and making sure that we're ready to go. Like you said, just yesterday, or day before yesterday, the tool to look at plans went up on healthcare.gov, and we've been using it. Actually, this morning, an navigator was just showing some plans to a consumer. And don't wait. I just send them all over here, and we'll help them.
I can only concur with that point. I mean, we've been seeing people nonstop. So consumers are coming in, and they are making sure, you know, their account information is updated. Obviously, now you can see the plans. So I would think that that consumers not only can come in now, but they are.
Okay. And what should people expect if they're applying for the first time? Do they need to bring anything with them? Is there anything they should be prepared for as they sit down and take a look at this application?
So, yes. You know, if they contact us or if they're walk-ins, we will always begin an account. We always begin the process. If they don't have the appropriate documentation, we do a follow-up appointment because we could always go back into their file and upload the documentation that they need or that they're missing. So there's always an initial step that we take when they're here. But, yeah, we always remind consumers to bring proof of income and if they are residents, to make sure that they provide information on their immigration status and social security numbers for their children and everybody that in the household. So that's ideal, but again, we always initiate an account. We always open the file, the profile, and just set up something back, a follow-up appointment in case they need to submit those documents.
Okay, great. Thank you. One of the questions was about our subsidy calculator at Kaiser Family Foundation. When was that going to be updated? As soon as we can is the answer. The premiums were just released yesterday, so we are working away on that. But people should know that healthcare.gov has a subsidy calculator embedded in it as well. So you can go to healthcare.gov, you can type in your zip code, your age, your family size, and your estimated income, and that will give you an estimate of your subsidy, your premium tax credit subsidy that you're available, that you're eligible for. It will show you all the plans priced, taking into account that premium tax credit amount. If you're eligible for the cost-sharing reduction plans, it'll show you those, so you'll get to see how much lower the deductibles are and so forth. So there is a subsidy calculator out there now, and the Kaiser Family Foundation one will be available soon. Okay, we've got a question from Patricia about Florida. Is it true that there is a waiting list to get onto the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program in Florida? Jody, you want to try that one?
No, not at the moment. I think we're all in a holding pattern at the moment, waiting to find out what's going to happen with CHIP reauthorization. So obviously, I sincerely hope not, but at the moment, we're still enrolling kids.
Okay. And Daniel, this is for Frederick in Texas. Will the Texas Consortium have navigator contact information by zip code?
So, yes, if you go to Texas, Cover Texas Now, it will have that information. And I know I could speak for our page right here in Dallas, enrollnorthtexas.org. You could do a search by zip code, and it provides you with the local organizations that they're providing service. So I know it is the same on Cover Texas Now, and you could just search it by zip code.
Okay, thanks. And here's a question actually for both Jody and Daniel. Will the Florida and Texas Navigator groups be able to link to people – oh, I'm sorry, be able to link people to Navigator groups in other states? That's an interesting question. Do you ever work across state lines?
All the time.
All the time, okay.
I think, Daniel and I certainly have reached out for consumers. I've reached out to people all the way across the country. So I think that is definitely something we consistently do. Our job is to make sure that any consumer that is in need of assistance, no matter where it is, they're going to get it. So, yeah, we facilitate that often.
Yeah, and, you know, Karen, that is a great question because this morning early, about 9 a.m. Central Time, I got an email from a consumer in Atlanta that is moving to Dallas and he needs help. And it was sent by a steering committee member of the National Association of Health Access Assisters. So, yes, and, you know, Jody actually has sent numerous consumers to me, so absolutely, whatever they need, we of course send them to the right person in the right state.
Great. Okay, we are a mobile population. Okay, let's see. This is from Kim in Florida. Please confirm that enrollment for all Florida counties has been extended to 12/31. We've received conflicting information and need confirmation. Do you want to start on that one, Jody, or you want me to start and then you jump in?
Yeah, you can go ahead and start. That's fine.
Okay. So the federal government did extend open enrollment for people who are living in or who have moved from hurricane-affected counties. All of the counties have been designated that way for the state of Florida. But you will have to attest. You will have to request essentially a special enrollment period. It's only a two-week period, so it starts on December 16th and goes through the end of December. And you'll just have to attest to the fact that you live in one of those counties and that you need more time to sign up for 2018 coverage. So it's not an automatic thing. You will have to go in and request this hurricane special enrollment period through your Marketplace account. Jody, are you guys providing any other sort of information to folks about that? I guess even before, if you can, it's better to just get this all done during the regular open enrollment period. There's always a crunch at the end, and it's probably going to be pretty crazy the last couple of weeks in December. But I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jody.
Yes. I mean, I think, you know, everything you said is exactly what we're telling folks. I mean, you know, you don't want to send out mixed messages that you know, open enrollment is actually going to go to the end of December because, you know, if you're not considered, you know, in that affected area, and I think it was, and I'm sorry, you may have already just said that, but isn't it like 48 counties in Florida that?
I think it's all of them. Yeah, all the counties.
Is it all the counties? I saw it in somewhere else that somebody had put 48 counties somewhere. But, you know, regardless, you know, we want people to, we want people to have coverage January 1st. So I think that's important to remember is that even with that special extension, it's really vital that people get in, you know, before that December 15th date, because we want people to have coverage at the beginning of the year.
Okay. And a related question from Jeanette asking which Texas counties receive the additional open enrollment time. Daniel, I don't know if you want to go through a list of all 51. We can also post on our website along with the slides the link to the FEMA map that shows all of the designated counties.
Yeah, I think that will be ideal. Again, 50 some counties, but most of them on the coast, on the coast of Texas. So that will be better.
So certainly Harris County around the Houston area, but it's a big swath along the eastern part of Texas. And then I noticed the two counties around Dallas were also designated. So Okay, so we'll put that link up on the Kaiser Family Foundation website. That'll be up there with the slides as well. One more back to Jody from Vicki. How can non-navigator groups in Southwest Florida best help to get the word out? I live in Southwest Florida, the Fort Myers, Naples area, and we aren't hearing very much about open enrollment. Thank you.
I appreciate that. You know, at this point, we can use all the help we can. So we have a lot of materials where we've got volunteers that I think are coming in to, you know, with each of the programs and working with our Southwest Health Planning Council. They're the lead to coordinate that area. So I would encourage folks to reach out to them and find out all the ways that volunteers can help in getting disseminating information and getting that information out. We are going to be running PSAs on radio and TV, using social media, and we have, you know, some digital campaigns going on, and we're doing these in Spanish and English as well. So all of these things are going to be hitting the airwaves as we are going into November 1st and through the open enrollment period. But the Southwest Health Planning Council would be your link to finding out what volunteers can do in that area specifically.
Okay, great. Thanks. We have a general question. Are HSA-eligible plans being affected for 2018? And I assume that question means affected by rate increases. And the answer is yes. The HSA plans wouldn't be at the silver level. Well, maybe they would be. Are they? I don't know. Yeah, I guess they would be. They're not special. So if they fall in the silver tier, then they, if they're offered on the marketplace, they could be affected as well. So you just have to go to healthcare.gov and look in your area, see what your plan choices are, see if that particular plan is still being offered next year and what the price would be. Okay, here's another question about off-marketplace plans. And, Jody, I don't know if you're going to know the answer to this. So I've not seen the off-marketplace premiums here. We just had access to what was on healthcare.gov. But the question is, are Florida Blue off-marketplace bronze plan premium increased 25% this year after increasing 21% last year for the same plan? This year's 25% increase does not reflect your suggestion that the non-silver plan premiums won't increase as much this year due to the non-payment of the cost-sharing reductions. How do you explain that? So the silver plan premiums actually went up 40%, depending on the area. So good news, bad news. 25% isn't as bad as 40, but I totally hear you, Jamie, that this is a huge, big increase. Premiums were going up, I think, everywhere this year. 25% is on the high side from what we've seen in some other states, but beyond that, I'm sorry, I don't have a lot of comprehensive information about what's going on with off-marketplace silver plans. So you may want to reach out to the insurer directly or check with the state insurance department to find out if there are other off-marketplace plans that perhaps didn't raise their premiums that much. That might be another way to get some more information about what's going on with rates off the marketplace in Florida. I'm sorry I don't have more for you. Okay, let's see. Are there any rules? Okay, this is a question from Frederick. Are there any rules governing people assisting someone with online enrollment? Maybe that's a question about how it is that navigators get certified. So obviously anybody can help their neighbor or their mom or somebody just to be a pal. But marketplace certified assisters like Jody and Daniel do have to follow rules, do have to complete trainings, do have to follow guidelines and ethics and spending patterns. There's all kinds of rules that apply to them. So marketplace certified assisters and brokers can all be found in addition to the the central kind of websites that Jody and Daniel described for Florida and Texas on healthcare.gov. You can also click on the Find Local Help button, and that will also produce for you by zip code a list of in-person assisters as well as brokers or agents if you want to work with them that have been certified to help people on the marketplace. So they've been through the training and they know what all the rules are. Okay, let's see. A question for Daniel. Your area covers East Texas, but I didn't see any locations in East Texas. Do individuals have to come to Dallas for help? Where can people in East Texas get help?
No, I have navigators in all the way to Texarkana. So we're covering East Texas, again, border of Louisiana and Arkansas. So you could find us on Find Local Help. There's information, specific information there. But no, that is the best part of our navigators, that they are mobile. And I have people in Paris, I have people in Longview, Texas, I have people in Texarkana, and in Tyler. So, and of course, numerous navigators in the Waco area south of Dallas. But the northeast area of our territory is covered.
Okay, and a related question from Luis, how do we access navigators in our area? I'm in San Antonio.
I think the best way to do it, you could go to the Texas Wide Coalition, Cover Texas Now, or Find Local Help. I think those are the best two best venues or platforms to use. And you will find actual information in Cover Texas Now about the coalition in San Antonio, with local organizations helping in the area.
Okay. All right. Here's a question, a general question from Michael. If subsidies are denied due to not filing the tax return, will the individual have a special enrollment period if the filing is done after January 1st? No. The answer is no. So that's going to be another trick to the shortened open enrollment this year. If you get a notice and you figure out that you're not eligible for subsidies because you haven't yet been able to file your tax return, open enrollment is going to run out a lot faster this year. So you can sign up for coverage for 2018. It's just that the marketplace won't start premium tax credits for you. So in order to effectuate your coverage, you're going to have to pay that first January premium, the whole thing, without benefit of the tax credits. After you file, the marketplace will turn your tax credits back on and you can receive them for the rest of the year if you're already enrolled in a marketplace plan. But the trick is going to be to get over the hurdle of paying that first month's premium. Okay, and then here's a brain twister from Michael. I'm not sure if I know the answer. If an individual is delinquent on a premium payment now, but still in their grace period on January 1st, will they be auto-renewed? Okay, so auto-renewal is something the marketplace does, so it will just assign you to a plan. If you're delinquent in your premiums, and if you got a notice from the insurance company that they're going to start this practice of, you know, collecting the back due premiums before they essentially accept your binder payment, what they'll do is they'll take your binder payment and they'll apply that to the back due premiums. So, I'm not sure about how the grace period twist works on that, but I will find out and let you know, and I'll make sure that we have an FAQ about that on our website so that other people can see the answer as well. How's that? Okay. And last one, because it's just 1 o'clock, from Randy. This is a general question. If I have health coverage through a retirement health plan, but it's expensive, if I drop it, is that considered a qualifying event or a change in life event? So the general answer is no. If you just drop coverage because it's too expensive, so you haven't lost eligibility for it, that does not ever trigger a special enrollment period. Depending on the nature of your retiree health plan, you may the fact that you have that may not make you ineligible for marketplace coverage and tax credits. So, we would really need to know more about kind of the nature of your retiree health plan. Is that considered kind of separate from the employer health plan? Sort of how is it funded and so forth? So I think the best thing would be to reach out to a navigator in your area and see if you can get some help from them in finding out more information about your general circumstances. But in general, dropping other coverage that you're eligible just because you can't afford it does not trigger a special enrollment period. Sorry. Okay. I think that's it. It's 1:01. We're going to have to wrap up. One final reminder, this was recorded. It will be posted online, the recording and the slides, by tomorrow morning. If you submitted a question that we didn't get to, please contact our communications associate, Katie Smith, and she will route your question to one of us to answer. Please remember that our open enrollment resources are available on kff.org, and you can keep up with new information at KFF online via email and social media, so please link up with us that way as well. Thank you to everyone for joining us today, and have a really good open enrollment.
Thank you, Karen.